Some run from this prism, fearing romantic-era monsters and possibly pitchforks. While usually the prism delights in covering stories that examine how we are living in the world of science fiction, I have to admit, I'm not quite sure what to do with this one. Apparently, building off an experiment that led to the successful transplant of a monkey head onto another monkey's head in the 1970s, where the monkey survived for 6 days, some scientists are now saying that they may be able to pull off human head transplants, helping to determine whether we are living in the land of science fiction, dystopia, or perhaps horror. We are joined by Dr. Jerry Silver. He's a professor of neuroscience at the Case Western Reserve University. Welcome, Dr. Silver.
I'm glad to be here.
So let's start with that question. Is this science fiction, dystopia, or horror?
I think it's a blend of both and some truth. And that's making it quite interesting. There is some truth to the possibility of this procedure. We can talk about the science that has led to this, but I believe we're so far away from the word successful head transplant that I think we need to talk about this in terms of fantasy. There are some aspects of horror in terms of the animal care issues that we need to address as well.
Now, as you said, the science is progressing where this might someday be possible. And if it could be accomplished, it would represent a huge step moving forward. Can you help our listeners understand how difficult a head transplant might be? What are some of the parts?
Well, there are a lot of parts. So let's go back a little bit and talk about fusion of tissue, of neural tissue. The use of polyethylene glycol and some sugars called chitosan can fuse membranes. And an interesting membrane that can be fused is a cut nerve fiber. And it has been shown in invertebrates and also more recently in warm-blooded vertebrates that one can fuse a cut sciatic nerve in the leg. That's worked by George Bittner and a guy named Richard Borgens. He's at Purdue, has shown some evidence that PEG or chitosan can also fuse nerve cells in the spinal cord. He did this in guinea pigs in vitro in a dish. And also there are some reports for severe contusive injury in dog that just in simple flooding of the tissue with polyethylene glycol can restore some function. So there's the truth. And I've read those papers. They have some problems in terms of the modeling and I think some exaggeration in the terms of the robustness of the effect. But nonetheless, it looks like animals can get better, peripheral nerve and even the spinal cord. But in the spinal cord injury model, the spinal cord was not cut all the way through. It was simply compressed, contused. There was no massive separation of any soft tissues. And so the polyethylene glycol, having been applied rapidly after the injury, seems to function somewhat in that model. Now, it's quite a leap then to move towards a complete severing of the head from the body and then moving that head to another body. That's a huge leap, I would say light years in the future. In a separated head, you have all of the soft tissues have been disconnected. The trachea, the esophagus, and all the bony spine has been removed. So you have a tremendous amount of bleeding. The second thing that happens is you cut the spinal cord all the way through. It's not the same animal. It's then moved to a donor. And in order to align that spinal cord and then fuse it with these polyethylene glycol-like molecules is an entire leap in the future. It seems almost impossible to me to be able to push the spinal cord close enough, keep it sustained in a close opposition for long enough with all the bleeding and all the other problems that are going on. It seems almost impossible. Then you have the problem further of secondary damage that's going to occur once the animal wakes up again, because now you're going to have continued bleeding, and that's going to lead to trauma of the fuse processes. And I could go on and on talking about the phrenic nerve, which is cut, so the animal can't breathe. The animal has a vagotomy, so the vagus nerve is not working. You have to get those working again. So just a tremendous, tremendous speculation that this could actually be done. And I just think it's on the edge of fantasy.
And you haven't even gotten into the basic issues of rejection, which deals with any kind of transplant. If you're putting a head onto something, it's got to chemically be congruent with everything else in the entire host body that you're associated with. Chances are that's not going to happen, right?
No, you're going to have to put the animals on cyclosporin for the rest of their lives, how long that might be. The life of that animal, it's funny reading I actually read the paper from the Italian group. And when you get near the end of the paper, it almost makes you want to laugh because they talk about psychiatric problems of dealing with, you know, the head and the new body, and how are they going to communicate with each other, and will they accept each other? And so I thought psychiatric problems are far in the future.
Taking a step back, though, I spoke last year with a surgeon who was able to restore hand movement to someone with quadriplegia. Now, what they did was they took a piece of nerve from a different part of the body and sort of rewired it around the damaged nerve so that the hand could talk to the brain.
Yeah,
mind
I
you,
know that work.
There's a lot, I think there's a big difference between doing that and, as you said, refusing the millions of different wires that you have to connect.
Right. It is millions. And so this fusion technique, and they talk about the clean cut. They don't say how they're going to cut the spinal cord cleanly. They just say that they will. And, of course, they're going to have to sew the blood vessels together. They're going to have to sew the sheath around the spinal cord called the dura mater, so you have enclosed cerebrospinal fluid. And that's going to take time. You're going to have to sew all the muscles back together again, which they say they're going to do by marking them. And then you're not going to be able to breathe at all because the phrenic nerve, which controls the diaphragm, has been cut. So they're going to glue that. And the vagus nerve, which controls all the organs in the body, the heart, the gut, and all lots of internal organs, the kidneys, the spleen, that has to be fused. And whether that will or won't occur, one doesn't know. Actually, what I would like to see them try to do, if this is even possible, is just simply cut the phrenic nerve on both sides. Now, the animal will have to be on a respirator. And if they can show me, or anybody, that fusing the phrenic nerves on both sides can restore breathing, then I would say maybe, possibly, the spinal cord might be second. But I'd have to see one small step first, and then maybe even, we're going to talk about how the animals actually do, then maybe think about the possibility of doing this for the entire head in the future. But one small step at a time.
On the other hand, I've heard people say in the scientific world and in other worlds, sometimes you really ought to shoot for the stars so you can land on the moon. By going to something this outrageous, not even worrying about the ethical, moral, or psychological issues that are associated with it, might it open up different avenues of exploration now that we have people's brains churning on how to deal with spinal cord injuries and how to deal with some of the other things that would have to be addressed in order to do something this complex?
Right. I mean, I see this in terms of the word robust. I mean, how robust a functional recovery or repair could there be if you start with the entire head transplant? And frankly, I think this you have to realize that these authors are proposing to experiment on cadavers, which is fine. But they're also proposing to experiment with primates, which in my mind is not fine. I was actually present, and I was in a lab that was collaborating with Robert White, who's the surgeon who first did this in the United States. So they actually did a full head transplant onto another monkey, and I got to see one of these. Most of the times they did this, they had a donor monkey, which was just simply supplying blood, separated from the head by some distance using tubes, and the head would wake up. I was frankly horrified, the word horror, at the obvious discomfort that you know, poor little head was going through. I mean, I can't even imagine the pain. I mean, these are pretty smart little animals. The awareness that they are now a quadriplegic, which is basically what this is. It's a model of quadriplegia, but much worse because all the soft tissue is removed. But the animal, you know, was able to chew, to swallow, but the food would fall on the floor. And I just thought, I mean, Robert White was constantly hounded by animal rights groups, and rightfully so, in my opinion. And so animals are going to go through an awful lot in the testing stage of this to move towards human. And I just don't think this should happen because the recovery is not robust enough to give the animal what I would call anything close to a normal life.
And one of the things that we often ask in the pursuit of progress or scientific achievement is whether or not technology keeps up with philosophy or morality, right, and what the balance between the two is. So what you're saying is when we ask the question, can we really ought to be asking, as soon as we do, the follow-up question, should we? And it sounds like your answer is no.
No, I mean, should we? If animals have to suffer at this level, and we do animal work in my laboratory, I'm not, you know, we have to obey all the rules that are set up by the government and our university for experimenting with animals to keep them pain-free, you know, to eliminate suffering as much as possible during our experiments. But the monkey, because you need to assess function in the awake animal, the animal arises out of anesthesia without a body or a body that's disconnected from it. It's only basically a pump for blood. So I just don't see this being robust enough. Yeah, you might get some tiny amount of function across that fused spinal cord. Yeah, maybe. But you have so many secondary consequences of this that life is going to be very brief and just horrible for the animal. So they would have to show me in incremental steps first in rats, perhaps another species a little bit lower that they could possibly do this. But I would suggest that there's going to be all kinds of problems secondarily. This animal is not going to have a long life, as they're suggesting is possible. We can talk about all the other changes that are going to occur secondarily that are going to ruin the fusion.
Let's go to the Frankenstein question first, which is simply, if I have a head that I want to transplant, do I need a living body, or am I, as you said, are we digging through graves to get it? Is it going to basically cost two lives?
No. They're proposing that the body, which is the recipient for the head, would be somebody who was brain dead, a living person, but brain dead. And so that would be the body, would be relatively normal.
Mm-hmm.
And the head would come from somebody who had a fatal illness in the body,
mm-hmm,
a heart attack. But the brain would be relatively, and the head would be relatively normal. And those would be the two that you would put together. And I guess you could talk about, the question is, who would do this? Who would be the person you'd want to spend, I think they said $13 million to do the surgery, if it could even be possible? So that's an ethical question. You're not revitalizing, in the Frankenstein sense, a body that was dead. You're putting two bodies, a body that was alive with a head that was alive, and creating one normal.
Which in some senses has its own, or even worse, ethical dilemma, because you're basically saying this person who is technically alive, we're going to turn off their machines and give them no hope. And the question is, you know, where did the family, when does that decision come from? And more, I'm just imagining what would be the payoff, because I'm imagining that someone would be getting rewarded for providing this body to the person who could afford the $13 million surgery.
Really scary. That's possible. That could be a very big ethical dilemma. If we could ever fantasize about this working, then you have the ethics of you know, who is going to be able to avail themselves of this technique. Only the very wealthy, obviously. But I just don't think this is all such fantasy and speculation that I don't even think the ethical questions are something we can talk about. Because of all the problems that are going to occur, nobody would really want to do this. Nobody. It's not going to happen. This is, in my opinion, never going to happen robustly enough to give some quality of life that's worth doing it in the first place.
Moving from the land of science fiction to the land of impossibility, I'm Andrew Hiller for The Prism, and we've been joined by Dr. Jerry Silver. He's a professor of neuroscience at the Case Western Reserve University. Thank you for taking this journey with us.
Glad to be here.